Welcome back, Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaveYourLife.com. And we survived the first round of near frosts here in Rochester. I was driving in down into the heart of the Finger Lakes just a couple days ago, and I saw some signs of frost on like annual vines, like morning glories and things that were kind of exposed, and you could see the sort of the leaves, uppermost leaves, were toasted by the frost, even though the whole plant didn't die. But generally around Rochester, I didn't see any frost. And we have some balmy weather this weekend, even warmer tomorrow, 84, 80 on Monday, and then it falls off a cliff once again, and we go directly to like 60, and nighttime temperatures closer to 40. So probably not any freezes, at least in the frosts in the forecast for Rochester. I think the lowest temperature I saw was 39, but those forecasts change, and keep an eye on it. There may be a night or two when you want to cover some things, because if we had gotten a frost this past week and you'd covered some things, and people probably did cover some things, you know, if you can get past a early frost or two, you can gain another whole month of enjoying flowers and your annuals. I was looking out back at our garden just yesterday, thinking, "I don't want a frost to kill this," you know, and that might not happen until mid-October. Generally, is when our frost date is, right around October 15th. That's when we would normally expect to have a frost. And so many weeks until then, hopefully we can continue to enjoy these annuals and to think about bringing some of them inside. They just make great houseplants. Christine Froelich, she posted a photo of a plectranthus, which I think it's a genus, is got all kinds of different, very different plants in it. But all of them, as far as the ones I've run into, make great houseplants. Some of them have fuzzy gray leaves, like lamb's ears almost. Some of them are variegated and are more like Swedish ivy. Some of them, like the one she posted, and I have had this for, I don't know, 3-4 years now, and I bring it in for the winter, the variety is called Mona Lavender, and it is dark green leaves with kind of a dark purple underneath them and stems that are kind of purple, and then a really gorgeous, almost bright purple flowers that come late. So they are really just starting to flower now. And again, you know, an early frost would be kind of devastating because you're just starting to enjoy these flowers. But you can bring them in, and they'll probably continue flowering inside for a while. And you can propagate it then in the spring. So at least, you know, bring one or two in and have them as mother plants. But when I go to the garden centers in the spring, I'm on the lookout for plectranthus just to see what different ones they might have, because they seem to be very easy to propagate. And I took cuttings off of one of mine, not really in the spring. I did it more in early summer, I guess. And probably 30 of them. And I think all 30 lived. And I didn't use rooting hormone. I didn't use sterile potting soil. I didn't cover them and keep them, you know, humidified. I just put them in some spare potting soil that I'd already used for something, and they rooted very easily. So look for plectranthus. It's an odd name, but there has many, many members of this family, and they're all Very different and all very easy to keep as houseplants. So again, the Mona Lavender is one you should look for in the spring. That's I think my favorite of these Plectranthus, and I look forward to having it inside for the flowers, just for the leaves. The foliage is a pretty color, they're really dark green. And then I'll probably bring in my, I've got a really gorgeous hanging basket, which is an ivy geranium, a beautiful color, pink. And I picked off all of the spent flower heads this summer, and it seems to be flowers in waves. So when I got it, it was in full bloom. It was beautiful. Don't recall where I got it now. Might have been at Kirby's Farm Market. They've had some really good hanging baskets. Route 104 near Herd Orchards. But so it bloomed beautifully, and then it had all these dead flower heads on it, and I went through and deadheaded it, which took a while because I had a lot of them. Might have spent 15 minutes at least on that one, but fairly large hanging basket. And then nothing happened. It was just a green plant, green leaves for probably a month, and then a whole new set of flowers came out. And it looked like something out of a magazine. It was just stunning for a month. And now those flowers are starting to fade, and I'll go in and pinch them off again. Actually, with geraniums, they'll break off usually if you get the stem of the flowers and bend it backwards, it will just snap off the stem. And you can also use a pair of scissors. Scissors are good for deadheading things that have a lot of stuff. They're lighter than pruning shears, and they're thinner blades, and they're just easier to do when you're got a plant like this with lots of things to deadhead. So I'm hoping if I do this again, give it some more time outside, a little more fertilizer, that I want to bring it in before frost or freeze. We'll get that flush of blooms inside, and that'll look pretty cool if I'm able to do that. So, as I said, I think last week, maybe the last month, begonias, geraniums, these just make fantastic houseplants, Plectranthus. And for years, I had this elephant's ear in a big pot. It was like a shrub pot. Quite a substantial pot, and it's always done really well, but I'd never divided it, and I was a little nervous about it because many years ago I divided a tropical plant, and I don't know a lot about tropical plants, but I had this friend of mine have a peace lily, a big peace lily. It was really gorgeous. And, well, I can divide this. I cut up the root system into, I don't know, maybe 10 different pieces, and they all died. And I'm not sure whether it was the way I did it or kept them too wet, because that will, keeping root systems too wet will kills more plants than underwatering. There were a bunch of them. I don't think I uniformly did them in from overwatering or anything. I think maybe you're just not supposed to divide peace lilies the way I did. So I've been nervous about tropical plants ever since. And actually, that was like before the days of the internet, at least as it stands now, where you can look up and say, how do you divide a peace lily? So with this elephant's ear, it was a large one. And I've seen the elephant's ear tubers in the garden centers for sale, so I sort of knew what it looked like. But it was hard to tell whether there were more than one in this big pot, whether they propagated, And so I finally took the plunge, looked up how to divide them on YouTube, saw some interesting videos, got an idea how to do it, and took this really kind of massive elephant's ear out of the pot and discovered that I had about 15 little baby elephant's ears around it, and planted those out, gave some away, and put some in our garden, put some in pots, and put the original one back in a pot. It's a substantial elephant's ear on its own. And then had a few new elephant's ears start from pieces of roots, I think, that were just left in the potting soil. And I was growing potatoes in containers and used some of the potting soil from the original elephant's ear. And then suddenly I have elephant's ears growing in two of my potato bins. And so now I got lots of elephant's ears. So if anyone would like an elephant's ear, and they make great houseplants for the winter, let me know. Email me, michael@saverlife.com, and I can figure out how to get one to you. So the leaves become huge on these elephant's ears. They do drip water inside when you... if you keep them well watered, they tend to drip a little more water. So, and they're big enough and tall enough that they can kind of arch over furniture and, you know, leave droplets of water on wood. And if it's nice furniture, that can leave water stains. So it doesn't really matter for a, you know, hardwood floor or a rug or anything. It's not that much water, but over nice furniture, it can create some stains you don't want. So, but otherwise, fantastic houseplant. And again, I've got lots of them now. These two extras, I had three in the ground. I had two others in pots. I've got the big original one. So I've got a bunch of extra elephant's ears. And again, nice outside in the garden. Some of the commercial properties like Wegmans and Pittsford Plaza have used elephant's ears and also ornamental bananas in their plantings. And I mean, you can leave them outside and they'll die in compost, and you can get new ones next year. But I do like to bring them in for houseplants. They don't need much sun, don't really need much care, and really do great on their own. So look them up online if you haven't seen them before. The leaves aren't as big as an elephant's ear, but my neighbor has one that might be a variety that just has bigger leaves, or he fertilizes it more, but he's got one with leaves three times the size of mine. So fun to grow, and you'll have more in the future, judging from the way mine has propagated itself. And you could see the separate tubers in the pot. It was pretty obvious which tubers, how to divide it. And I will have to go back and look at peace lilies someday and try to figure out what I did that killed all those peace lilies divisions. That was kind of heartbreaking. I've had like two, maybe three big sort of horticultural failures that just, you know, I've killed lots of plants, but these were just kind of devastating because it was a friend's peace lily that looked great, and I essentially killed it. The other one was a dawn redwood tree, which had become too leggy under other bigger trees, and I cut it way back, thinking it would just resprout new branches and it didn't. So I essentially killed that. And now it's the dead trunk is sort of lying down next to our pond. Looks kind of cool there. But it would have been more fun to have a actual living tree if I hadn't cut it back. I cut it back very severely. But I was certain it would resprout, and not didn't even sprout one new branch. So just I throw those out there just as a reminder that we all make uninformed or poor decisions with our plants sometimes, those two really stick with me, and I've been more careful since then, in dividing tropical plants and in pruning things too harshly. The Upstate Gardeners Journal continues to print and is available online. The September-October edition is out, and I didn't look up to see what the plant was on the cover, but I think it's a smoke bush. They have a purple leaf, but this one is kind of backlit with some sun, I think. So a really gorgeous, gorgeous cover. 25 years, Jane Milliman's been published in the Upstate Gardeners Journal and continues to have lots of great articles. There's an article about a place in Buffalo that I'm looking forward to going to in the near future, which I hadn't heard of. It's the Plant Shack, and some really cool photos. Descriptions here, and the mascot cat even got a photo. And really a fascinating story and amazing number of plants and clay pots in this building. It reminds me a little bit of a garden store that was in Niagara on the Lake. I don't think it's there anymore, but it actually started out in the town of Jordan, which is near St. Catharines, or in the 20s located. It was called the Copper Leaf, and they opened one in Niagara on the Lake, but I don't think that is open anymore. But it was a really unusual and cool looking garden store, not really a garden center, but a garden store. So this the Plant Shack looks really interesting. And then an article about bulbs, how to plant, what to do with them, and in general what to do in September and October, and then their listing of classes, horticultural organizations, all those things. So pick up a copy. They're available at garden centers now, and it's time to pick up bulbs too. Anyway, might as well. One of the articles in the Upstate Gardeners Journal is on deer-resistant bulbs, and that is not tulips. Deer love tulips. They so do squirrels and pretty much everything else, but the deer will come and eat all of your tulip bulbs the day before they bloom. And if you have 10 tulips, I guess that's not a big deal, but years ago I ran into someone who had planted something like 200 tulips, and it was going to be a gorgeous display, and the deer ate them all. A couple hundred bulbs. They had a great meal that night. So in general, daffodils are toxic to animals, so they are much more reliable. So by all means, plant some tulips. I usually plant a dozen or two, and they fade with time, usually. So, they're nice for a couple of years, and then they, after that, sometimes just the green foliage comes up. But daffodils tend to come back every year, and in fact, expand in number every year. We divided some this past spring, and after they were done blooming, and I got some daffodil bulbs to plant from our own garden that we harvested, and they'd stopped blooming because they were too close to each other. So we'll divide them. They may take a year to sort of regenerate and become a bigger bulb, and then should have some great flowers for many years. These have been in for probably 10 years. So daffodils are a really good investment. Tulips, not so much, but the colors of tulips are really extraordinary. And Sarah's Garden Center always has some really cool colors and unusual bulbs. Bristol's Garden Center, they traditionally have one of the biggest selections of bulbs. Of course, one of those bulbs includes garlic. It's time to plant that now through Columbus Day, kind of, or really until the ground freezes, but some point here in late September or early October. You can also plant a saffron crocus, so you can grow your own saffron, which, if you use a lot of it, you probably appreciate how expensive it is. Once you start to grow it, you'll realize why it's so expensive, because you need something like 4,000 bulbs of crocus to make an ounce of saffron. And that's a lot of bulbs to plant. But you can. I have a few. I love watching them come up each year. I harvest like 12 strands of saffron, which smell amazing, from these crocus. They're a little small purple crocus, and these long strands of saffron that are kind of magical. And they'll bloom this fall for you. It's a fall blooming plant, the saffron crocus. And sometimes you'll find them in bloom in the box or the bag in the garden center. Hopefully you get them before that happens, and they'll actually bloom just, you know, on your desk, on your windowsill. Then when it's done blooming, you put it in the ground, and the foliage will come up in the spring, and it'll bloom again for you next fall. So look for some saffron crocus. Also, I posted a photo of the autumn crocus, which is not a crocus, but is called colchicum. Much bigger than a crocus, so it looks just like a crocus, it's just much bigger. And those are more expensive bulbs, no saffron associated with them, but they also bloom in the fall, the colchicum. And there's one called water lily that has more petals and looks kind of like a water lily. So there's a couple different colchicum varieties, and you should experiment with those too. They will also bloom with no soil, no water, either in the garden center, you know, sales box, or maybe on your kitchen table. And when done blooming, you can plant them, and they'll come up every year for you. Been very reliable. They would like some sun. I have one that doesn't get enough sun, and it's just sort of hanging in there. I need to move it to a spot where it will get more sun. I mean, it's on the north side of our house, under a holly bush, and a tree. So it's a lot of shade. It's amazing it's been blooming for this many years. If you have comments, questions, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. If you want some help identifying some things in your garden, or potentially poison ivy, stuff like that, again, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back with For the Love of Food and Discover the Finger Lakes this morning. Tomorrow, the grapevine here at saverlife.com. Enjoy this balmy weather. Have a great day.